Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Neo FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. Erling Haaland has took the Premiership by storm, with many predicting that he'll smash goal-scoring records after his explosive start to the season. However, it'll be a tall order to surpass the achievements of the legendary Dixie Dean, who scored remarkably 60 goals in the 1927-1928 season. Incredibly, Dixie Dean ended his career in Ireland with Sligo Rovers. My guest on the show today is Paul Little, author of a new book on Dixie Dean's time in Sligo, In the Shadow of Bill and Bulbin, Dixie Dean at Sligo Rovers, and I'm delighted to say that Paul is joining us on the show. Paul, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
No, thanks very much for having me, Patrick.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I mentioned there, everyone's talking about Haaland and what he might achieve in English football, but he'd be doing very well to emulate the feats of Dixie Dean. And we're talking, Paul, pre-war period here. Just, I suppose, younger listeners mightn't be aware or mightn't be too familiar with Dixie Dean. Can you just maybe tell us briefly how massive of a figure was Dixie Dean in English football pre-war?
Sure, Patrick. Yeah, it's not even that he was a massive star in English football. He was actually a massive star internationally. He was probably the first international, you know, or superstar in football. And a lot of that came from that, as you say, that 1927-1928 season when he scored the incredible 60 league goals in actually only 39 matches. But his record across his time, he was best known for playing for Everton, which he played for 10, 11, 12 years. But he scored 349 league goals for them in 399 games. So that gives you a sense of his quality. You know, he had 37 career hat-tricks in that time. He was a goal machine, but that particular season, the 27-28 season, the 60 goals, it's extraordinary. And I know, I actually, it's funny, the Haaland story kind of ties in quite nicely in a way, because you see him play and you see what kind of he looks like, such a monster on the pitch, and he almost looks magnified, I think, against other players. It's just his physique and his power. And I think Dean had that to a large extent as well. He wouldn't have been quite the same size in height, but the power and the speed and the speed of reaction and the reading of the game, I suppose, are quite similar. So it's interesting to talk about centre forwards that way. But I would, I suppose, I guess a word of warning for those who think that Haaland's going to do it. You know, looking back at the time, what struck me when I looked at that particular season actually was, you know, you're thinking he scored 60 goals in those 39 league games. I was looking at the people, you know, when I grew up, Ian Rush, Gary Lineker, those guys were the top, you know, strikers around, and then later, say, Andy Cole and Alan Shearer. But he effectively scored as many goals in one league season that they were scoring in two. You know, so, you know, this is what we're talking about. So it's a tall order for Haaland, I think, and even when you think you've got great strikers like Mo Salah around who are still, when you get into the 30 goals, it's a hell of a record these days, but you've got to add on another 30 goals, you know, to be meeting Dean, and I'm not quite sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, and you mentioned, and quite rightly you said, it wasn't just in the English game, he was just an incredible figure. But it begs the question, how did Sligo Rovers, who you recount in the book, there were just weren't long in the League of Ireland. They were just starting to establish themselves. How did they manage to persuade such a great figure to come over and play for them?
Well, there's still an element of mystery around that. I think that there was some talk of some divine intervention involving some Sligo clergymen who were based in Merseyside at the time, and one in particular who got to know Dean and the Everton team. But at the time, it was actually, he'd already hung up his boots at this stage. He had left Everton under a cloud, had fallen out with T.O. Kelly, who was in charge of the club at the time. He'd fallen out with him, and he'd been kind of edged aside. Tommy Lawton had come in as a potential replacement. Some injuries were starting to have an impact on Dean's career at that stage, and then he was shifted out effectively quite quickly and unceremoniously out to Notts County. But he then picked up a number of more injuries at that point and only played, I think, only a handful of games over a season or so with them, and decided to hang up his boots. But then he moved into the whole area of talent scouting. Now, back in those days, no matter how great a figure you were as a footballer, when the game was finished with you, you were finished. You know, you had to look for other employment. And whilst you would have earned fairly good money through your career, it wouldn't carry through the rest of your life. So Dean had to look for other work, and all he knew was football, really. He had actually, in his last year or so, with Everton, set up a sports shop in Merseyside that had you know, collapsed and didn't really work out. So he knew that it was, you know, he needed money, I suppose, to make a living and look after his wife and kids. So he started into talent scouting business, and around that time, it was actually the turn of the 1939-40 season. It's actually January 39, sorry. He was contacted by Sligo, or representative of Sligo, who were looking into the second half of the season. They were on the lookout for a centre forward, because they were sitting second in the league at the time, but Shamrock Rovers were more or less over the hill and away at that stage, and it was unlikely they were going to get caught. But there was money to be made out of the FAI Cup. It tended to draw bigger crowds, and if you could get to the latter end of it, certainly the final, semi-final, there were big gates and big money to be made there. So they set themselves the task of trying to get as far as they could and get a good cup run, but they needed a centre forward. So they got in touch with Dean, but not to get him to play. They wanted him to do a bit of scouting and see could he get him somebody from England to come over and play for that second half of the season for Sligo and score some goals. But as it happened, Dean struggled to find anybody who wanted to come. So he hit upon the idea of offering his own services. He was feeling a bit better. He'd been out of the game for a couple of months. The injury seemed to have cleared up a little bit. He was feeling a little bit fitter, and he thought, well, maybe they might be interested in me. And that's where the story starts, because Sligo, I think, were shocked at the offer that came from Dean and jumped at the chance. They managed to get some local benefactors to effectively raise the wage and offers Dean a chance to come over, which he jumped at, and the story started from there.
Yeah, and people, League of Ireland fans would be familiar that there was a lot of established players, where people will remember George Best coming over to play in Cork. Bobby Charlton had a spell at Waterford. I think Jeff Hurst might have played. Like, there was a lot of players came over to play, but it would be fair to say that Dixie Dean's time at Sligo, it was quite different to a lot of other players that came into the league. It was a short spell, but it was quite successful, and he narrowly missed out on finishing his short spell in Ireland with FAI Cup. So it was quite a successful period for Dixie Dean in Sligo.
Yeah, well, it was quite different in a way, and that's kind of what caught my attention years ago when I kind of heard about the story, because I'd heard about Bobby Charlton playing for Waterford, and I'd heard about Best playing down in Cork, and they were very much you know, at the end of the career. So Charlton was 39 when he turned out for Waterford, and so obviously that had an effect on his ability to get around the pitch. Now, apparently he did quite well, but it was all based on money, and there was, he would get a cut of whatever gate receipts there might be, but that side of the deal didn't really work out that well, where they didn't necessarily get the interest they thought they might get. So that was a very short-lived period. I think it was only a matter of a month or a bit more. Best, when he went to Cork, was sadly not the player that he had been in his youth. And it's not that he was old, but I mean, I suppose his lifestyle had really taken its toll at that stage. And so whilst there was a lot of interest in it, I think people probably came away feeling quite sad if they saw him play, maybe more than anything else. So Dean's situation was different. So whilst he had retired by a couple of months, he was still only 32 when he came. So that bit of period out of the game seemed to help in terms of recovery. And so he was there from January through to the end of May, and would have come back perhaps if the war hadn't broken out. But he was, over that period, it's interesting to read match reports from the time, that was the Sligo reporters were you know, besotted immediately and could see no wrong. The Dublin papers tended to question his mobility, and perhaps that he wasn't the player that he had been. They could see that the class was still there, but the mobility wasn't there and the pace wasn't there anymore. But over that period, that 4 months, when he played 11 odd games, by the time he reached the cup final, if you read the cup final previews, there was a sense that he was much more like he had been in his pomp. Now, obviously not quite as good, but nevertheless, you know, that period, those 4 months, he got fitter and fitter, and the goals were flowing. And so he was a kind of a different animal come the final time, and very influential. So yeah, it was a different story to the likes of Charlton and Best, and people who were coming for that last paycheck and maybe only staying for a few games. And there was a period as well, I remember in the 70s and 80s, when you might have got the likes of Terry McDermott or these people coming over for a handful of games to try and raise the gates. This was a more prolonged period that Dean had with Rovers. And as I say, it might have gone further had, you know, Adolf Hitler maybe not intervened, you know, some months later.
And it would be fair to say that he really enjoyed his time in Sligo, and even the family's affection for his time, even in the Dixie's granddaughter wrote the foreword to the book. So that would suggest to me that there was a lot of affection for Sligo. And you even mentioned that he liked his golf, and he really enjoyed playing the golf in Sligo. So it just seemed to be a really enjoyable period in Dixie Dean's life.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I talked to Melanie Prentice, his granddaughter, and she actually grew up with him. And so she said, yeah, I mean, it's probably actually what caught my interest most when I was initially researching, and when I read the story first. I read Nick Walsh's book on Dean, and there was just a couple of pages at the end of the book about his time in Sligo. But what was striking is that he just mentioned that it was one of his, you know, most enjoyable periods in the game, which when you think of a guy who was, you know, a legend, a living legend, that for him to say that playing in a kind of small, you know, one of the kind of most isolated football outposts in Europe at the time, and Sligo then isn't Sligo now, it was quite amazing that he should pitch up there. But yeah, he obviously the lifestyle suited him. You got to remember too, though, in fairness, he left his wife and kids back home in England, so it's not like today. We're talking about a footballer of the caliber of you know, Messi or Ronaldo, etc. He was of that kind of ability. But if you imagine any of those, which is obviously never going to happen, but if they did come to Ireland, they'd be coming with the whole family and a huge entourage. He came on his own. And he travelled back a couple of times to visit the family, but it was a different, I suppose that was more difficult for him that way. At the same time, I suppose he probably enjoyed the fact that he might have had less responsibilities while he's away too. And golf was one of his passions, and he played in the West of Ireland Championships, which is obviously a very prestigious amateur championship, which he actually went to 3 rounds and ended up, he got knocked out on, I think it was Easter Sunday, and then went off to play for, yeah, maybe it wasn't Easter Sunday, actually, it was over that weekend, I think, close enough. Yeah, he ended up then getting knocked out in the morning and then going to play for Sligo in the afternoon and scoring. So he was certainly living the life, I'd say, and he certainly did enjoy his time there. And I think there was that affection for the place and how he was welcomed, obviously, you know, stuck with him. And then the club itself has kept in touch with him over the years. They brought him back for a cup final there, their next cup final in 1970, I think it was against Bohemians. He was flown over for the game. He later on then in 2000, the last time Sligo won the league, when they had their first Champions League appearance against Molde in Sligo, they brought over the Dean family as special guests as well. So they've kept those ties all the way through, which is interesting too. So it kind of makes the story much more enduring, say, than Best in Cork or Bobby Charlton at Waterford.
Yeah, and before I let you go, and Paul, one thing that it is remarkable reading your book, I think you capture an era in football which is just so alien to what we have now. We mentioned Haaland at the start of the our talk, and there's no way Haaland will have to never have any money worries for the rest of his life. But the one thing that strikes me about Dixie Dean, it is a remarkable. You mentioned he ended up, he ran a pub for a while. He worked in security for a while. And you mentioned he was getting up at 4:30 in the morning. It is a remarkable snapshot of a time in footballers' life where there were just ordinary citizens, and they had to work right up to their, I suppose, retirement age.
Yeah, well, I mean, once you were even at the height of the game, I mean, a lot of professional players would still, in the off season, might have had some other work. Dean was lucky; he would have been getting there was a maximum wage at the time, and he would have been on that. However, it still, you know, was a limited amount of money compared to what you might be earning today. And I suppose maybe the best illustration of how difficult it was, and how once the game was over, and I'd had little regard for the players in many ways, and there was no work for them. There was no punditry work, there was no coaching work as such, or very little. You don't have the kind of staff that you have these days. That when he left at the end of the season, after the FAI Cup final replay, he went back to England, and he had good money in his pocket from Sligo, but with war broken out, he was waiting to see would he get drafted in. So, but he still needed to earn a crust in the meantime, and the only job that he could get at the time in Birkenhead was working in the abattoir. So that was quite a change from literally only a month before turning out in front of a 35,000, nearly 40,000 at Dalyman Park for the cup final, and then working in the lairage of the abattoir, which is abattoir, right? So quite a different world, shall we say, than what we have today.
Yeah, but the great thing is, and the thing you capture, Paul, is he just seemed to be a very, very likable character, and he took everything in good grace. Like, he never complained, and a legendary footballer as well. Paul, listen, we really appreciate you taking the time to take our call. Paul's book, In the Shadow of Belbulum, Dixie Dean at Sligo Rovers, is available now, and any League of Ireland fans, any football fans, really, really highly recommend it. It's a really, really cracking tale, and it's brilliantly told. The book is available now in all good bookshops or on Amazon, wherever you get your books. Paul, thanks a million for taking our call this evening.
Not at all, Patrick. Great to talk to you.